Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
If you have a Bible, I hope you do. Be turning to the book of James, James chapter 1. This morning, I'm going to start a new series from the book of James, which is a letter. It's a letter. And I'm calling this series A Faith That Works. And you're probably familiar with the passage in James that talks about faith and works and how you can't have faith without works, and that definitely plays into the title. But more than just that passage, the letter of James is one of the most practical pieces of writing in the New Testament, in that it really talks about how you take this faith that you have in Christ and you live it out in day-to-day life, in day-to-day situations. And so it's really how you take your faith and you put it to work. And so that's where the title comes from. And in terms of a kind of introduction to the letter, there's not much. There's just one verse of kind of the greeting. And he begins by simply saying that in verse 1, that he's a servant of God, the Lord Jesus Christ, and he addresses it to the 12 tribes in dispersion. Now, the 12 tribes, I mean, he's addressing this to Jews. And the dispersion, for those of you that have been going through Acts with me on Wednesday nights, we've talked about the dispersion that came after the stoning and the execution of Stephen. We begin to read about that in Acts chapter 8, where the church, or the church, who at that point were all Jews, were scattered throughout the known world because of that intense persecution that was happening in Jerusalem. And so James is addressing this letter to them. Now, this morning's lesson comes from the instruction that he just jumps right into in verse 2. And remember, there were no verses when he wrote it, so he just starts right off and jumps headfirst into something that we all deal with. And he says this. He says, "Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds." Now, a trial is really anything that puts us to the test. So the most obvious thing that you can think of is going through suffering. You know, suffering that can be caused by all types of things in this life. I don't have to explain to you what suffering is, because if you're of any age at all, you've dealt with suffering. You understand what suffering is. But he begins by telling them to count it joy when you deal with these kinds of things. Now, I love to watch sports. We went for a while where we had basically no access to anything television-wise. And it was driving me crazy that I couldn't watch sports. I love watching sports. That's really about the only thing I watch. Yesterday, I was watching the Tennessee-Kentucky game. I spent more time, I think, on my knees on the floor than I did sitting on the couch because I was so stressed. But I love it. I love it. I love watching sports. And occasionally enjoy the things that go with sports, like talk shows and, you know, those kinds of things, but only to a point. I used to listen to a lot more like sports radio and, you know, watch a lot more sports shows, sports opinion shows. But nowadays, because there are so many of those things, there's this whole genre of sports shows that are based on the premise of someone. There are these individuals, and they sometimes refer to them as talking heads. And there's the premise of these shows is that one of these individuals will say something completely outlandish or controversial, and then they'll argue about it for half an hour. And then they'll say something else that's outrageous or controversial, and they'll argue about it for another half an hour, and that's your show. And they'll refer to these outrageous, controversial statements that they make as hot takes. Okay, this show is full of hot takes, and we're going to talk about the hot takes. Well, that's the phrase that kept coming to my mind this week as I was thinking about this how James begins this letter. This is almost like a hot take, because this is not natural, right? It's not natural to say, hey, when things are horrible, when you're suffering, when you hate your life, then you should be happy about it. You should find joy. I mean, that's pretty controversial. Pretty outlandish, right? And that's the way James starts this off. Now, the practical part of this is that, you know, again, as I said at the beginning, if we're of a certain age, we've gone through suffering. And some of us, you know, I'm thinking of you know, as I'm getting to know you guys more and more, intense suffering. I mean, extremely difficult situations in life. And James says, in those situations, count it all joy. It doesn't make sense from a human perspective. So what are the reasons why that we should find joy, that we should be happy when bad things happen? Well, James thankfully doesn't leave the readers hanging. He explains the reasons why we should find joy when things in life are not going well, why we should kind of go against the grain of human nature and find joy when bad things happen. Why should we do that? The first one of those things, and I've given you three blanks to fill in the bulletin if you want to. The first one of those things comes in verse 3, and if you're looking to fill in the blank, the word I wrote in my notes is the word perseverance. Perseverance. And it comes from this verse, or these two verses, verses 3 and 4. He says, for you know, now this is after he says, count it all joy when you endure trials of various kinds. And he says, for, meaning here's kind of conclusion as to why, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. Your translation may say endurance, may say patience, may say perseverance. But he says, the testing of your faith, when you go through trials, it's going to produce steadfastness, endurance, perseverance, patience. And he says, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. So the first thing James says is, when your faith is tested, when you go through suffering, when you go through trials, it builds endurance. It builds perseverance. Well, what does that mean? What does that mean? Well, when I so often, as you guys are learning, that I relate so many things to running. And this week, especially on Monday of this past week, as Facebook is often will remind you of things that happened in the past. You log on and it says, hey, however many months ago or years ago or whatever, and it'll show you something that happened. Well, it said on Monday, 10 years ago today, and there was a picture of me, I didn't repost this, there was a picture of me crossing the finish line in a marathon, and it was my fastest one I've ever done. And I was like, wow, it's been 10 years since I felt that good. I mean, it's been a while. But I was thinking about that season of my life. I was in New Orleans, Louisiana, running Rock and Roll New Orleans Marathon. And that was the fastest one that I ever did. And my goal for that race was to break 3 hours and 15 minutes. Now, I had been pushing for that goal for 2 years. And I think that was over 6 or 7 races where that was my goal, every one of those races. So, you know, 6 times I didn't make it, and the 7th time I did. So it wasn't a, hey, I set the goal and I immediately got there. So every race during that 2-year span, I was pushing the edge of my capabilities. I mean, I was right there knowing that, you know, hey, this is, if I pull this off, it'll be all I got. And so I knew that every race that I was going to go in during that season, that at some point in the race, the wheels are going to fall off and things are not going to be going so well. And in running circles, we talk about hitting the wall. You hit the wall. I can tell you technically what that means, but in terms of the way you think about it, it's hitting a wall. The first one of those races, by the way, where my goal was 3:15, I literally hit the wall as I was running under an inflatable wall that they had put up so thoughtfully at mile 20 of the race. Up a hill in Minneapolis, Minnesota. But when you go through those, the hitting the wall, I mean, It's all you want to do is just stop and start walking. That's it. You want to start walking. You want to quit. And there have been plenty of times where when I've hit the wall, I've stopped and started walking. But it's all you want to do. You don't want to move another step. But I know that when I go through those periods in a race, that even though they're miserable, you know, they're awful, I learn something every time I do that. Every time I go through that, I learn something about the weaknesses that they're showing that were in my training, that were in my preparation, that was in my hydration or nutrition on race day, in my race day plan. It teaches me something about where I am weak, where I need to improve, what failings I have, and how now I can go back and work on this thing that it's teaching me. Well, I think going through trials is the same thing as it relates to our faith. It's like an extreme workout for our faith that show us where our faith is weak. Show us the things that we need. You know, another example. So this week was also another sort of an anniversary, or last week. On Monday I had my annual visit with my neurologist. And it's been 14 years since I was diagnosed with this neurological condition I've explained to you guys before. And it was, this particular visit was the last one I'm going to have with this doctor, because he's retired. And it got emotional. And I, for the first time in my life, I hugged my doctor. I mean, we hugged right there in the middle of the exam room, because it had been kind of an emotional journey. And going through that. But I was also thinking about this lesson. And if I were to go, like, say, what are some of the biggest trials that I've been through in my life? That would definitely be in the top 10. And I've told you guys before about how, before all that happened, that one of the things I was doing in my life is that if I ever doubted something, you know, right, there was a question I couldn't answer about my faith, what would I do? I would just sweep it under the rug. I would just sweep it under the rug and just pretend like that question didn't exist. Well, when all that hit, and all of a sudden I don't know what's going on with my body, and he's starting to throw out things that are like, this is terminal stuff. Well, all those doubts come out. And I realize not only are these doubts that I have never dealt with, they're also, I've never taken ownership of my faith. And so that showed me in that moment, or in that season, this is something I need to work on. I need to deal with. I've got to deal with taking ownership of my faith and addressing these doubts that I have. I've got to do that. And maybe the trials in our life show us that we need to spend more time in the Word. We need to spend more time in prayer. We need to spend more time praising God. Maybe they show us that we need to spend more time with our brothers and sisters because they're a source of encouragement. Maybe it shows us that we need to find a specific brother or sister to confide in with what we're dealing with so that they can help us carry the burden. You know, maybe it shows us that we need to be more outward facing in taking care of others so that we are not so focused on what we're dealing with. There could be any number of things that a trial can teach us, but by showing us where we're weak, it helps us better prepare for the next trial that we go through. Because we've learned, and through God's help, we have adapted to what we're dealing with. Does that make sense? So again, it's like an extreme workout for our faith. Now, the next question that I would have is, well, what if I'm going through a trial and I don't see it that way? Like I'm right in the middle of it and I can't see. I can't be like, woohoo, this is testing my faith. You know, what if I can't do that? What if I can't get my head above the water so that I can see the potential ways in which this can help me? Which, I don't know about you, but almost anything I've ever gone through that has been that, you know, difficult, it's almost impossible for me to get my head above high enough to go, I know in the long run this is gonna strengthen my faith. Well, James addresses that. He says, if you go down to verse 5, he says, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God. Well, I don't think this is just a, hey, let's move on to a different topic. I think it's, if you lack the wisdom to see that what you're going through is building your faith, He says, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him. He says, if you don't have the wisdom to see that what you're going through can benefit your faith in the long run, pray to God about it. Pray to God for the wisdom to see things His way. Pray to God that He will allow you to see the good things that can come from this. But He says, when you ask, He says, let him ask in faith, not with no doubting. For the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. For that person must not suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. So he says, if you don't have the wisdom to see that this can benefit you, or that you should be joyful that God is, you know, allowing you to deal with this, he says, pray to God about it. Pray to God for the wisdom to see the benefit that can come from this, the endurance that you can gain, the perseverance that you can gain. But he says, if you pray about it, do it with faith, not with doubting. Don't doubt when you pray. Pray with faith. Well, what does it mean to pray with faith? I mean, you can say, well, you know, you believe that God can answer the prayer. Okay, but practically, what does it mean? What does it mean to pray with faith? I want you, if you got your Bibles, go with me to Mark chapter 11. Mark chapter 11, and go down to verse 22. Verse 22, he's talking to his disciples, and it says, Jesus answered them, have faith in God. Truly I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, be taken up and thrown into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that what he says will come to pass, it will be done for him. What does that say about how little faith that we have? If you have faith, you can move a mountain. How little faith do I have? He says, therefore I tell you, now listen to this phrase. I think this is the definition of praying with faith. Okay? Whatever you ask in prayer, does he say believe that you will receive it? No. Believe that you have received it. He says, when you pray, believe that the answer to your prayer has already been set into motion. Believe that God is already working to answer that prayer. Believe that you have received it, past tense. Believe that it has already been set into motion. You know, that's a difficult thing because it requires us to kind of look past our human humanity and our failings to put our trust so much in someone else, to believe that not only does God hear us and that God will answer us, but that He's already answered us. It's already been set into motion. But you think about Abraham, not just about prayer, but his entire life. Is that not how he lived his entire life, as though the promise that God had made to him, he had already received it? If you think about the promise that God made to Abraham, he made it to him when he was in a distant land. In most of the promises that God made to Abraham, Abraham never saw in his lifetime the fulfillment of that. But he lived his entire life as though what? He'd already received it, right? From getting up and leaving his homeland to even going to the point of being willing to sacrifice his son. And I want you to, you know, either listen or go with me to Romans chapter 4. When Paul is using Abraham as the ultimate example of one who was justified by their faith, he says this in verse 20. He says, no unbelief made him waver concerning the promise of God. Now again, did he see the promise fulfilled that he would have a son? Yes. But did he see the promise fulfilled that he would be a great nation, that it would number as the stars and the sand? Did he see the land that they would inherit? No, he saw none of that. Did he see the fulfillment of the promise made back in Genesis chapter 12 that through him all nations would be blessed, meaning through the sending of his son who was a descendant of Abraham? He saw none of that, right, while he was on this earth. But he says this, No unbelief made him waver concerning the promise of God, but he grew strong in his faith as he gave glory to God, fully convinced that God was able to do what he had promised. He lived his life as though he had already received it. And James says, when you pray for wisdom, believe that you have already received it. Pray with faith. Again, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. It's like if you're going to pray for rain, carry an umbrella. Believe it's already been set into motion. That's not our nature. Our nature is not to have that type of belief, that type of faith. But that's what James is calling on us to do if we can't see the benefit that trials are building our endurance, our perseverance. The second blank that I've given you, don't worry, these last two points are shorter than the first two. The first one. The second blank, I've got the word perspective. Perspective. And he says this, verse 9. He says, let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation and the rich in his humiliation. Now, we'll stop there for a second. That's opposite, right? I mean, that's opposite of what the world would say to be true, right? He says, let the poor man boast in his exaltation and the rich boast in his humiliation. And you go, what? That's backwards, right? I mean, shouldn't the rich man boast in his exaltation and the poor man be upset about his humiliation? But there's a reason why James presents it that way. Because this is, again, contrary to human nature. And the reason why he explains it, the reason why he says it the way he does is comes at the second part of verse 10 and verse 11. He says, because, what does because tell us? Here's a conclusion, right? Because, like a flower of the grass, he will pass away. Meaning what? The rich in his riches. His riches will pass away. The thing that he puts his faith in is going to burn away just like the flower of the grass will pass away. He says, for the sun rises with its scorching heat and withers the grass. Its flower falls and its beauty perishes. So also will the rich man fade away in the midst of his pursuits. He says that just like the flowers of the field are going to burn away in the scorching sun, so are the riches that the rich man puts his faith in. Now, the poor man doesn't have riches to put faith in to begin with, right? So that's the setup. And this is all about a change in perspective, I believe. Let me see if I can illustrate it this way. I've mentioned this before, that I love photography. Okay? I love photography. And one really cool thing in photography, especially if you have a decent camera and a decent lens, is that you can take pictures with a very shallow depth of field. You may go, whoa, you're getting too technical for me. All that means is that whatever I'm focused on, everything else is kind of blurred out. Okay? Now, modern day smartphones, iPhones and Android phones, can fake this. They can focus on a person and blur everything else out. We can tell. Photographers can tell. We can tell when you're using a phone and you're not using a real camera. But when you focus on something, everything else is blurred out. Okay? But what that, not only will that allow me to just like emphasize my subject, but also with this, with no change in anything, I can completely change my perspective on what I'm looking at. Okay? Let me illustrate it this way. So I took this picture yesterday in my living room. I'm not expecting this to win any awards, by the way. But I set up my camera on a tripod. And I changed no settings. I left the settings consistent. I put it on the tripod. There's nothing that changes in front of the camera. Okay, I'm taking a picture of the same things. But if I look at this picture, what would you say it's a picture of? I would say it's a picture of a guitar. Maybe of a piano, but that's slightly blurry behind it. But I would say it's a picture of a guitar. Now, again, I didn't change anything that's in front of the camera. I didn't change any setting within the camera. I didn't change anything around the camera, but I took another picture. And what would you say that's a picture of? I would say that's a picture of a flute, okay? All it is a change in perspective. And I did that in like a second, okay? I just changed what I focused on. Now, I did all that to say this. I think what James is trying to tell his readers is that trials can change your perspective on what's really important in life. Because the human nature of man is to do what? Put faith in stuff, right? Put faith in money, in jobs, in position, in whatever, status. But when do those things become irrelevant? When you're going through a struggle, when you're going through suffering. And in an instant, a trial can make you reevaluate everything, right? And the question is, do we allow the trial to be our teacher or not? And so the trial can show us that, hey, the poor man's got the advantage because he's not tempted to put his faith in anything else. And so he's exalted because his faith is always in God. The rich man hopefully can boast in his humiliation because if he's humiliated to know that, hey, I've been putting my faith in the wrong thing, maybe he will come to his senses and put his faith in the right thing. Does that make sense? It's a sudden change. Again, one change, boom, it all looks different, right? It all looks different in an instant. You know, things that seemed so important yesterday are no longer that important because trials can change our perspective on what we're dealing with in life. What did Jesus say? We just went through this in the series on the Sermon on the Mount. You know, lay up not for yourselves where? Treasures on this earth. Why? Because moth and rust destroy and thieves break in and steal. What does that mean? Life happens, right? Life happens to the stuff on this earth. But instead, put your faith, put your treasure where life can't touch it. And sometimes trials in an instant can show us that that's the truth, right? Again, human nature, I got to have my stuff. I got to have my stuff or I'm not going to be happy. Trials can show us it's not about the stuff. I got to put my faith in God. Trials can give us perspective on what's really important in life. All right, last one, and the lesson will be yours. The last one is the word promise, is what I have in my notes. And this one is the obvious one. He says, blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial. What does that mean? The trial, he's been talking about trials since verse 2. And he says, blessed is the man who endures. He says, it's, you know, the purpose of faith or of trials teaching us endurance is not just so that we can, brag about enduring. It's what? It's to make it to the finish line, right? I mean, the purpose of finding joy in trials because they build our endurance, our perseverance, so that we can face the next trial is so that we can make it to the end, right, with our faith in God, so that we don't give up, so that we don't quit on God. But he says, the one who remains steadfast, meaning to the end, remains steadfast, endures, and maintains their faith in God. He says, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him. That's a promise. Just like Abraham was given a promise that he lived his entire life on, we have been given a promise that we can live our entire lives on. Do you believe that God can fulfill that promise? Do you believe that God has already set the wheels in motion to fulfill that promise? That's what living in faith is all about. And that promise is one of those major things that can sustain us through the challenges of life. Paul said in Romans 8, talking about suffering, just like James is, about the future glory that's coming, the fulfillment of the crown of life, the fulfillment of the promise. He says, I consider that the sufferings of this present time, what I'm dealing with right now, are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed to us. He says, is it worth enduring? Yes. Is it worth learning through the trials of life to deal with the next trial and the next trial and the next trial? Yes. Why? Because the future glory is going to be so much better than anything we've ever dealt with in this life. It's not even worth comparing. And I don't know about you, brothers and sisters, but I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that glory that exceeds my understanding. And I believe that God has a plan and he will deliver on that promise. I believe that he will. Now, the challenge for me is, am I going to live my life as though I believe it? Am I going to live my life with joy and contentment and happiness because I believe so much in that promise? Trials teach us perseverance, how to endure, how to strengthen our faith and deal with the next trial. They teach us perspective, teach us what is really important in life. And if we endure trials to the end, God has promised us future glory with Him. So James, even though it seems like an outlandish statement, a hot take, there is reason to find joy in the difficulties of life, because it's all about seeing us through to the end, to where we can return home, where we can return home to heaven with God. If you're here this morning and you are enduring trial, and you know that one of the things you need is the support of your brothers and sisters, you know this is a supporting group, you know this is an encouraging group, it's a praying group as well, and if there's anything we can do to help you, to go through, to help you carry the burden that you're dealing with, that's something that we don't know about, we would love to help you. If you're here this morning and you've never given your life to Jesus, you know, that promise that's out there is only for those who put their faith in God rather than themselves. Only for those who make a decision to follow God instead of themselves, we call that repentance. Who make a decision that I'm going to be buried with Christ in baptism, giving up my old life and coming up to live a new life just as He was resurrected from the dead. If you haven't made that commitment, I encourage you to think about that this morning. If there's anything we can do for you, please come while we sing our invitation song.